Rub a little good earth on yourself, lest men take you for a woman, and work a little for the rice you eat." And Wang Lung forgot that he had ever had pride in his son's writing and in his cleverness at books, and he flung himself out, stamping his bare feet as he walked and spitting upon the floor coarsely, because the fineness of his son angered him for the moment. And the lad stood and looked at him with hatred, but Wang Lung would not turn back to see what the lad did. Nevertheless, that night, when Wang Lung went into the inner courts and sat beside Lotus as she lay upon the mat on her bed, where Cuckoo fanned her as she lay, Lotus said to him idly, as of a thing of no account, but only something to say, "That big lad of yours is pining and desires to go away." Then Wang Lung, remembering his anger against his son, said sharply, "Well, and what is it to you? I will not have him in these rooms at his age." But Lotus made haste to reply, "No, no, it is Cuckoo who says it." And Cuckoo made haste to say, "Anyone can see the thing, and a lovely lad he is, and too big for idleness and longing." Wang Lung was led aside by this, and he thought only of his anger against his son, and he said, "No, and he shall not go. I will not spend my money foolishly." And he would not speak of it any more. And Lotus saw he was peevish from some anger, and she sent Cuckoo away, and suffered him there alone. Then for many days there was nothing said, and the lad seemed suddenly content again, but he would not go to school any more, and this Wang Lung allowed him, for the boy was nearly 18 and large like his mother in frame of bones, and he read in his own room when his father came into the house, and Wang Lung was content, and he thought to himself, "It was a whim of his youth, and he does not know what he wants, and there are only 3 years. It may be a little extra silver will make it 2, or even 1 if the silver is enough. One of these days, when the harvests are well over and the winter wheat planted and beans hoed, I will see to it." Then Wang Lung forgot his son, for the harvests, except what the locusts had consumed, were fair enough, and by now he had gained once more what he had spent on the woman Lotus. His gold and his silver were precious to him once more, and at times he marveled secretly at himself that he had ever spent so freely upon a woman. Still, there were times when she stirred him sweetly, if not so strongly as at first, and he was proud to own her, although he saw well enough that what his uncle's wife had said was true, that she was none too young for all her smallness of stature, and she never conceived to bear a child for him. But for this he cared nothing, since he had sons and daughters, and he was willing enough to keep her for the pleasure she gave him. As for Lotus, she grew lovelier as her fullness of years came on, for if before she had had a fault, it was her bird-like thinness that made too sharp the lines of her little pointed face, and hollowed too much her temples. But now, under the food which Cuckoo cooked for her, and under the idleness of her life with one man only, she became soft and rounded in body, and her face grew full and smooth at the temples, and with her wide eyes and small mouth she looked more than ever like a plump little cat, and she slept and ate and took on her body this soft, smooth flesh. If she was no longer the lotus bud, neither was she more than the full-blown flower, and if she was not young, neither did she look old, and youth and age were equally far from her. With his life placid again, and the lad content, Wang Lung might have been satisfied, except that one night, when he sat late and alone, reckoning on his fingers what he could sell of his corn and what he could sell of his rice, O Lung came softly into the room. This one, with the passing of the years, had grown lean and gaunt, and the rock-like bones of her face stood forth, and her eyes were sunken. If one asked her how she did, she said no more than this, "There is a fire in my vitals." Her belly was as great as though with child these 3 years, only there was no birth. But she rose at dawn, and she did her work, and Wang Lung saw her only as he saw the table, or his chair, or a tree in the court, never even so keenly as he might see one of the oxen drooping its head, or a pig that would not eat. And she did her work alone, and spoke no more than she could escape speaking with the wife of Wang Lung's uncle, and she never spoke at all to Cuckoo. Never once had O Lan gone into the inner courts, And rarely, if Lotus came out to walk a little in a place other than her own court, Olan went into her room and sat until one said, "She is gone." And she said nothing, but she worked at her cooking and at the washing at the pool, even in the winter when the water was stiff with ice to be broken. But Wang Lung never thought to say, "Well, and why do you not, with the silver I have to spare, hire a servant or buy a slave?" It did not occur to him that there was any need of this, although he hired laborers for his field, and to help with the oxen and asses and with the pigs he had. And in the summers, when the river flooded, he hired men for the time to herd the ducks and geese he fed upon the waters. On this evening, then, when he sat alone, with only the red candles in the pewter stands alight, she stood before him and looked this way and that, and at last she said, "I have something to say." Then he stared at her in surprise, and he answered, "Well, and say on." And he stared at her, and at the shadowed hollows of her face, and he thought again how there was no beauty in her, and how for many years had he not desired her. Then she said in a harsh whisper, "The eldest son goes too often into the inner courts. When you are away, he goes." Now, Wang Lung could not at first grasp what she said thus whispering, and he leaned forward with his mouth agape, and he said, "What, woman?" She pointed mutely to her son's room and pursed her thick, dry lips at the door of the inner court. But Wang Lung stared at her, robust and unbelieving. "You dream," he said finally. She shook her head at this, and, the difficult speech halting on her lips, she said further, "Well, and my lord, come home unexpectedly." And again after a silence, "It is better to send him away, even to the south." And then she went to the table and took his bowl of tea and felt of it and spilled the cool tea on the brick floor and filled the bowl again from the hot pot. And as she came, she went, silent, and left him sitting there, agape. "Well, and this woman, she was jealous," he said to himself. "Well, and he would not trouble about this with his lad, content and reading every day in his own room." And he rose and laughed and put it away from him, laughing at the small thoughts of women. But when he went in that night to lie beside Lotus, and when he turned upon the bed, she complained and was petulant, and she pushed him away, saying, "It is hot, and you stink, and I wish you would wash yourself before you come to lie beside me." She sat up then and pushed her hair fretfully back from her face, and she shrugged her shoulders when he would have drawn her to him, and she would not yield to his coaxing. Then he lay still, and he remembered that she had yielded unwillingly these many nights, and he had thought it her whim and the heavy hot air of departing summer that depressed her. But now the words of Olan stood out sharply, and he rose up roughly and said, "Well, and sleep alone then, and cut my throat if I care." He flung himself out of the room and strode into the middle room of his own house, and he put two chairs together and stretched himself on them. But he could not sleep, and he rose and went out of his gate, and he walked among the bamboos beside the house wall, and there he felt the cool night wind upon his hot flesh, and there was the coolness of coming autumn in it. Then he remembered this, that Lotus had known of his son's desire to go away, and how had she known? And he remembered that of late his son had said nothing of going away, but had been content, and why was he content? And Wang Lung said to his heart fiercely, "I will see the thing for myself." And he watched the dawn come ruddy out of a mist over his land. When the dawn was come and the sun showed a gold rim over the edge of the fields, he went in and he ate, and then he went out to oversee his men, as his custom was in times of harvest and planting, and he went here and there over his land, and at last he shouted loudly so that anyone in his house might hear, "Now I am going to the peace by the moat of the town, and I shall not be back early." And he set his face to the town. But when he had gone halfway and reached as far as the small temple, he sat down beside the road on a hillock of grass that was an old grave now forgotten, and he plucked a grass and twisted it in his fingers, and he meditated. Facing him were the small gods, and on the surface of his mind he noted how they stared at him, and how of old he had been afraid of them, but now he was careless, having become prosperous and in no need of gods, so that he scarcely saw them. Underneath he thought to himself over and over, "Shall I go back?" Then suddenly he remembered the night before, when Lotus had pushed him away, and he was angry because of all he had done for her, and he said to himself, "Well, I know that she would not have lasted many years more at the tea-house, and in my house she is fed and clothed richly." And in the strength of his anger he rose, and he strode back to his house by another way, and he went secretly into his house, and stood at the curtain that hung in the door to the inner court. And, listening, he heard the murmuring of a man's voice, and it was the voice of his own son. Now the anger that arose in Wang Long's heart was an anger he had not known in all his life before. Although, as things had prospered with him, and as men came to call him rich, he had lost his early timidity of a country fellow, and had grown full of small, sudden angers, and he was proud, even in the town. But this anger, now, was the anger of one man against another man who steals away the loved woman. And when Wang Long remembered that the other man was his own son, he was filled with a vomiting sickness. He set his teeth then, and he went out and chose a slim, supple bamboo from the grove, and he stripped off the branches, except for a cluster of small branches at the top, thin and hard as cord, and he ripped off the leaves. Then he went in softly. And suddenly he tore aside the curtain, and there was his son standing in the court and looking down at Lotus, who sat on a small stool at the edge of the pool. And Lotus was dressed in her peach-colored silk coat, such as he had never seen her dressed in by the light of the morning. These two talked together, and the woman laughed lightly and looked at the young man from the corner of her eyes, her head turned aside, and they did not hear Wang Long. He stood and stared at them, his face whitening and his lips lifted back and snarling from his teeth, and his hands tightened about the bamboo. And still the two did not hear him, and would not, except that the woman Cuckoo came out and saw him, and shrieked, and they saw. Then Wang Lung leaped forward, and he fell on his son, lashing him. And although the lad was taller than he was stronger from his labor in the fields and from the robustness of his mature body, and he beat the lad until the blood streamed down. When Lotus screamed and dragged at his arm, he shook her off, and when she persisted screaming, he beat her also, and he beat her until she fled, and he beat the young man until he stooped, cowering to the ground, and covered his torn face with his hands. Then Wang Long paused, and his breath whistled through his parted lips, and the sweat poured down his body until he was drenched, and he was weak as though with an illness. He threw down his bamboo, and he whispered to the boy, panting, "Now get you to your room, and do not dare to come out of it until I am rid of you, lest I kill you." And the boy rose without a word and went out. Wang Long sat on the stool where Lotus had sat, and he put his head in his hands and closed his eyes, and his breath came and went in great gasps. No one drew near him, and he sat thus alone until he was quieted and his anger gone. Then he rose wearily, and he went into the room, and Lotus lay there on her bed weeping aloud. And he went up to her, and he turned her over, and she lay looking at him and weeping. And there on her face lay the swollen purple mark of his whip. And he said to her, with great sadness, "So must you ever be a whore, and go a-whoring after my own sons." And she cried more loudly at this, and protested, "No, but I did not, and the lad was lonely, and came in, and you may ask Cuckoo if he ever came nearer to my bed than you saw him in the court." Then she looked at him frightened and piteous, and she reached for his hand and drew it across the welt on her face, and she whimpered, "See what you have done to your Lotus, and there is no man in the world except you, and if it is your son, it is only your son, and what is he to me?" She looked up at him, her pretty eyes swimming in her clear tears, and he groaned because this woman's beauty was more than he could wish, and he loved her when he would not. And it seemed to him suddenly that he could not bear to know what had passed between these two, and he wished never to know. And it was better for him if he did not. So he groaned again, and he went out. He passed his son's room, and he called without entering. "Well, and now put your things in the box, and tomorrow go south to what you will, and do not come home until I send for you." Then he went on, and there was Olan sitting, sewing on some garment of his, and when he passed, she said nothing. And if she had heard the beating and the screaming, she made no sign of it. And he went on and out to his fields and into the high sun of noon, and he was spent as with the labor of a whole day. 25. When the eldest son was gone, Wang Lung felt the house was purged of some surcharge of unrest, and it was a relief to him. He said to himself that it was a good thing for the young man to be gone, and now he could look to his other children and see what they were. For what with his own troubles and the land which must be planted and harvested in season, whatever might happen elsewhere, he hardly knew what he had for children after his eldest son. He decided, moreover, that he would early take the second lad out of school, and he would apprentice him to a trade, and not wait for the wildness of young manhood to catch him and make him a plague in the house, as the older one had been. Now the second son of Wang Lung was as unlike the elder as two sons in a house may be, where the elder was tall and big-boned and ruddy-faced, as men of the north are, and like his mother. This second one was short and slight and yellow-skinned, and there was that in him which reminded Wang Lung of his own father, a crafty, sharp, humorous eye, and a turn for malice, if the moment came for it. And Wang Lung said, "Well, and this boy will make a good merchant, and I will take him out of school and see if he can be apprenticed in the grain market. It will be a convenient thing to have a son there, where I sell my harvests, and he can watch the scales and tip the weight a little in my favor." Therefore he said to Cuckoo one day, "Now go and tell the father of my eldest son's betrothed that I have something to say to him. And we should, at any rate, drink a cup of wine together, seeing that we are to be poured into one bowl, his blood and mine." Cuckoo went then, and came back, saying, "He will see you when you wish, and if you can come to drink wine this noon, it is well, and if you wish it, he will come here instead." But Wang Lung did not wish the town merchant to come to his house, because he feared he would have to prepare this and that. And so he washed himself and put on his silk coat, and he set out across the fields. He went first to the Street of Bridges, as Cuckoo had told him, and there before a gate which bore the name of Yu, he stopped. Not that he knew the word himself, but he guessed the gate, two doors to the right of the bridge, and he asked one who passed, and the letter was the letter of Yu. It was a respectable gate, built plainly of wood, and Wang Lung struck it with the palm of his hand. Immediately it opened, and a woman servant stood there, wiping her wet hands on her apron as she spoke, to ask who he was. And when he answered his name, she stared at him, and led him into the first court, where the men lived. And she took him into a room, and bade him seat himself. And she stared at him again, knowing he was the father of the betrothed, of the daughter of the house. Then she went out to call her master. Wang Lung looked about him carefully. And he rose and felt of the stuffs of the curtains in the doorway, and examined the wood of the plain table, and he was pleased, for there was evidence of good living, but not of extreme wealth. He did not want a rich daughter-in-law, lest she be haughty and disobedient, and cry for this and that of food and clothes, and turn aside his son's heart from his parents. Then Wang sat down again and waited. Suddenly there was a heavy step, and a stout elderly man entered, and Wang Lung rose and bowed, and they both bowed, looking secretly at each other. And they liked each other, each respecting the other for what he was, a man of worth and prosperity. Then they seated themselves, and they drank of the hot wine which the servant woman poured out for them, and they talked slowly of this and that, of crops and prices, and what the price would be for rice this year if the harvest were good. And at last Wang Lung said, "Well, and I have come for a thing, and if it is not your wish, let us talk of other things. But if you have need for a servant in your great market, there is my second son, and a sharp one he is. But if you have no need of him, let us talk of other things." Then the merchant said with great good humor, And so I have such a need of a sharp young man if he reads and writes.
And Wang Lung answered proudly, My sons are both good scholars, and they can each tell when a letter is wrongly written and whether the wood or the water radical is right.
That is well, said Yu. And let him come when he will, and his wages at first are only his food until he learns the business, and then, after a year, if he do well, he may have a piece of silver at the end of every moon, and at the end of 3 years, 3 pieces. And after that he is no longer apprentice, but he may rise as he is able in the business. And besides this wage, there is whatever fee he may extract from this buyer and that seller, and this I say nothing about if he is able to get it. And because our two families are united, there is no fee of guarantee I will ask of you for his coming.
Wang Lung rose then, well pleased, and he laughed and said, Now we are friends, and have you no son for my second daughter?
Then the merchant laughed richly, for he was fat and well-fed, and he said, I have a second son of 10, whom I have not betrothed yet. How old is the girl?
Wang Lung laughed again, and answered, She is 10 on her next birthday, and she is a pretty flower.
Then the two men laughed together, and the merchant said, Shall we tie ourselves together with a double rope?
Then Wang Lung said no more, for it was not a thing that could be discussed face to face beyond this. But after he had bowed and gone away well pleased, he said to himself, The thing may be done. And he looked at his young daughter when he came home, and she was a pretty child, and her mother had bound her feet well so that she moved about with small, graceful steps. But when Wang Lung looked at her thus closely, he saw the marks of tears on her cheeks, and her face was a shade too pale and grave for her years. And he drew her to him by her little hand, and he said, Now why have you wept? Then she hung her head and toyed with a button on her coat, and said, shy and half-murmuring, Because my mother binds a cloth about my feet more tightly every day, and I cannot sleep at night. Now I have not heard you weep, he said, wondering. No, she said simply, and my mother said I was not to weep aloud, because you are too kind and weak for pain, and you might say to leave me as I am, and then my husband would not love me even as you do not love her. This she said as simply as a child recites a tale, and Wang Lung was stabbed at hearing this, that Olan had told the child he did not love her who was the child's mother. And he said quickly, Well, and today I have heard of a pretty husband for you, and we will see if Cuckoo can arrange the matter. Then the child smiled and dropped her head, suddenly a maid and no more a child. And Wang Lung said to Cuckoo on that same evening when he was in the inner court, Go and see if it can be done. But he slept uneasily beside Lotus that night, and he woke and fell to thinking of his life, and of how Olan had been the first woman he had known, and how she had been a faithful servant beside him. And he thought of what the child said, and he was sad, because with all her dimness, Olan had seen the truth in him. In the near days after this, he sent his second son away into the town, and he signed the papers for the second girl's betrothal, and the dowry was decided upon, and the gifts of clothing and jewelry for her marriage day were fixed. Then Wang Lung rested, and he said to his heart, Well, and now all my children are provided for, and my poor fool can do nothing but sit in the sun with her bit of cloth. And the youngest boy I will keep for the land, and he shall not go to school, since 2 can read, and it is enough. He was proud because he had 3 sons, and 1 was a scholar, and 1 a merchant, and 1 a farmer. He was content then, and he gave over thinking any more about his children. But whether he would or not, there came into his mind the thought of the woman who had borne them for him. For the first time in his years with her, Wang Lung began to think about Olan. Even in the days of her new coming he had not thought of her for herself, and not further then because she was a woman and the first he had known, and it seemed to him that with this thing and that he had been busy and without time to spare. And only now, when his children were settled and his fields cared for and quiet under the coming of winter, And now, when his life with Lotus was regulated and she was submissive to him since he had beat her, now it seemed to him he had time to think of what he would. And he thought of Olan. He looked at her, not because she was woman this time, and not that she was ugly and gaunt and yellow-skinned, but he looked at her with some strange remorse, and he saw that she had grown thin and her skin was sere and yellow. She had always been a dark woman, her skin ruddy and brown when she worked in the fields. Yet now for many years she had not gone into the fields, except perhaps at harvest time, and not then for 2 years and more, for he disliked her to go, lest men say, "And does your wife still work on the land, and you rich?" Nevertheless, he had not thought why she had been willing at last to stay in the house, and why she moved slowly and more slowly about. And he remembered, now that he thought of it, that in the morning sometimes he heard her groaning when she rose from her bed, and when she stooped to feed the oven, and only when he asked, "Well, and what is it?" did she cease suddenly. Now, looking at her and at the strange swelling she had on her body, he was stricken with remorse, although he did not know why, and he argued with himself, "Well, and it is not my fault if I have not loved her as one loves a concubine, since men do not." And to himself he said for comfort, "I have not beat her, and I have given her silver when she asked for it." But still he could not forget what the child had said, and it pricked him, although he did not know why, seeing that when he came to argue the matter out, he had always been a good husband to her, and better than most. Because he could not be rid of this unease toward her, then he kept looking at her as she brought in his food or as she moved about. And when she stooped to sweep the brick floor one day after they had eaten, he saw her face turn gray with some inner pain. And she opened her lips and panted softly, and she put her hand to her belly, although still stooping as though to sweep. He asked her sharply, "What is it?" But she averted her face and answered meekly, "It is only the old pain in my vitals." Then he stared at her, and he said to the younger girl, "Take the broom and sweep, for your mother is ill." And to Olan he spoke more kindly than he had spoken to her in many years. "Go in and lie on your bed, and I will bid the girl bring you hot water. Do not get up." She obeyed him slowly and without answer, and she went into her room, and he heard her dragging about, and at last she lay down and moaned softly. Then he sat listening to this moaning until he could not bear it, and he rose and went into the town to ask where a doctor's shop was. He found a shop recommended to him by a clerk in the grain market where his second son now was, and he went to it. There the doctor sat idle over a pot of tea. He was an old man with a long gray beard and brass spectacles as large as an owl's eyes over his nose, and he wore a dirty gray robe whose long sleeves covered his hands altogether. When Wang Long told him what his wife's symptoms were, he pursed his lips and opened a drawer of the table at which he sat, and he took out a bundle wrapped in a black cloth, and he said, "I will come now." When they came to Olan's bed, she had fallen into a light sleep, and the sweat stood like dew on her upper lip and on her forehead, and the old doctor shook his head to see it. He put forth a hand as dried and yellowed as an ape's hand, and he felt for her pulse, and then, after he had held it for a long time, he shook his head again gravely, saying, "The spleen is enlarged, and the liver diseased. There is a rock as large as a man's head in the womb. The stomach is disintegrated. The heart barely moves, and doubtless there are worms in it." At these words, Wang Lung's own heart stopped, and he was afraid, and he shouted out angrily, "Well, and give her medicine, can you not?" Olan opened her eyes as he spoke and looked at them, not understanding and drowsy with pain. Then the old doctor spoke again, "It is a difficult case. If you do not wish guarantee of recovery, I will ask for fee 10 pieces of silver, and I will give you a prescription of herbs and a tiger's heart dried in it, and the tooth of a dog, and these boil together and let her drink the broth. But if you wish complete recovery guaranteed, then 500 pieces of silver, Now when Olan heard the words 500 pieces of silver, she came suddenly out of her languor, and she said weakly,
"No, and my life is not worth so much. A good piece of land can be bought for so much." Then when Wang Lung heard her say this, all his old remorse smote him, and he answered her fiercely, "I will have no death in my house, and I can pay the silver."
Now when the old doctor heard him say, "I can pay the silver," his eyes shone greedily enough. But he knew the penalty of the law if he did not keep his word, and the woman died. And so he said, although with regret,
"Nay, and as I look at the color of the whites of her eyes, I see I was mistaken. 5,000 pieces of silver must I have if I guarantee full recovery."
Then Wang Lung looked at the doctor in silence and in sad understanding. He had not so many pieces of silver in the world unless he sold his land. But he knew that even though he sold his land, it was no avail, for it was simply that the doctor said, "The woman will die." He went out with the doctor, therefore, and he paid him the 10 pieces of silver. And when he was gone, Wang Lung went into the dark kitchen where Olan had lived her life for the most part, and where, now that she was not there, none would see him. And he turned his face to the blackened wall, and he wept. 26. But there was no sudden dying of life in Olan's body. She was scarcely past the middle of her span of years, and her life would not easily pass from her body, so that she lay dying on her bed for many months. All through the long months of winter she lay dying and upon her bed, and for the first time Wang Lung and his children knew what she had been in the house and how she had made comfort for them all, and they had not known it. It seemed now that none knew how to light the grass and keep it burning in the oven, and none knew how to turn a fish in the cauldron without breaking it, or burning one side black before the other side was cooked, and none knew whether sesame oil or bean were right for frying this vegetable or that. The filth of the crumbs and dropped food lay under the table, and none swept it, unless Wang Lung grew impatient with the smell of it and called in a dog from the court to lick it up, or shouted at the younger girl to scrape it up and throw it out. And the youngest lad did this and that to fill his mother's place with the old man, his grandfather, who was helpless as a little child now. And Wang Lung could not make the old man understand what had happened, that Olan no longer came to bring him tea and hot water and to help him lie down and stand up. And he was peevish because he called her and she did not come, and he threw his bowl of tea on the ground like a willful child. At last Wang Lung led him into Olan's room and showed him the bed where she lay, and the old man stared out of his filmed and half-blind eyes, and he mumbled and wept because he saw dimly that something was wrong. Only the poor fool knew nothing, and only she smiled and twisted her bit of cloth as she smiled. Yet one had to think of her, to bring her in, to sleep at night, and to feed her, and to set her in the sun in the day, and to lead her in if it rained. All this one of them had to remember, but even Wang Lung himself forgot. And once they left her outside through a whole night, and the next morning the poor wretch was shivering and crying in the early dawn, and Wang Lung was angry and cursed his son and daughter that they had forgotten the poor fool who was their sister. Then he saw that they were but children trying to take their mother's place, and not able to do it. And he forbore, and after that he saw to the poor fool himself night and morning. If it rained or snowed, or a bitter wind blew, he led her in, and he let her sit among the warm ashes that dropped from the kitchen stove. All during the dark winter months, when Olan lay dying, Wang Lung paid no heed to the land. He turned over the winter's work and the men to the government of Qing, and Qing labored faithfully, and night and morning he came to the door of the room where Olan lay, and he asked twice each day, thus in his piping whisper, how she did. At last Wang Lung could not bear it, because every day and every night he could only say, "Today she drank a little soup from a fowl," or "Today she ate a little thin gruel of rice." So he commanded Qing to ask no more, but to do the work well, and it would be enough. All during the cold, dark winter, Wang Lung sat often beside Olan's bed, and if she were cold, he lit an earthen pot of charcoal and set it beside her bed for warmth, and she murmured each time, faintly,
"Well, and it is too expensive."
At last, one day, when she said this, he could not bear it, and he burst forth,
"This I cannot bear. I would sell all my land if it could heal you."
She smiled at this, and said in gasps, whispering,
"No, and I would not let you, for I must die, sometime, anyway. But the land is there after me."
But he would not talk of her death, and he rose and went out when she spoke of it. Nevertheless, because he knew she must die, and it was his duty, he went one day into the town to the coffin-maker's shop. And he looked at every coffin that stood there ready to be bought, and he chose a good black one made from heavy and hard wood. Then the carpenter who waited for him to choose said cunningly,
"If you take two, the price is a third off for the two. And why do you not buy one for yourself and know you are provided?"
"No, and my sons can do it for me," answered Wang Lung.
And then he thought of his own father, and he had not yet a coffin for the old man. And he was struck with the thought, and he said again,
"But there is my old father, and he will die one day soon, weak as he is on his two legs, and deaf and half-blind. And so I will take the two."
And the man promised to paint the coffins again a good black and send them to Wang Lung's house. So Wang Lung told Olan what he had done, and she was pleased that he had done it for her, and had provided well for her death. Thus he sat by her many hours of the day, and they did not talk much, for she was faint, and besides, there had never been talk between them. Often she forgot where she was as he sat there in stillness and silence, and sometimes she murmured of her childhood, and for the first time Wang Lung saw into her heart, although even now only through such brief words as these,
"I will bring the meats to the door only, and well I know I am ugly and cannot appear before the great lord."
And again she said, panting,
"Do not beat me. I will never eat of the dish again."
And she said over and over,
"My father, my mother, my father, my mother."
And again,
"Well I know I am ugly and cannot be loved."
When she said this, Wang Lung could not bear it, and he took her hand and he soothed it, a big, hard hand, stiff as though it were dead already, and he wondered and grieved at himself most of all, because what she said was true, and even when he took her hand, desiring truly that she feel his tenderness towards her, he was ashamed because he could feel no tenderness, no melting of the heart such as Lotus could win from him with a pout of her lips. When he took this stiff, dying hand, he did not love it, and even his pity was spoiled with repulsion towards it. And because of this he was more kind to her, and he brought her special food and delicate soups made of white fish and the hearts of young cabbages. Moreover, he could not take his pleasure of Lotus, for when he went in to her to distract his mind from its despair over this long agony of dying, he could not forget Olan. And even as he held Lotus, he loosed her because of Olan. There were times when Olan woke to herself and to what was about her, and once she called for Cuckoo, and when, in great astonishment, Wang Lung summoned the woman, Olan raised herself, trembling, upon her arm, and she said plainly enough,
"Well, and you may have lived in the courts of the old lord, and you were accounted beautiful, but I have been a man's wife. And I have borne him sons, and you are still a slave."
When Cuckoo would have answered angrily to this, Wang Lung besought her and let her out, saying, "That one does not know what words mean now." When he went back into the room, Olan still leaned her head upon her arms, and she said to him,
"After I am dead, that one, nor her mistress neither, is to come into my room or touch my things. And if they do, I will send my spirit back for a curse."
Then she fell into her fitful sleep, and her head dropped upon the pillow. But one day before the new year broke, she was suddenly better, as a candle flickers brightly at its end. And she was herself, as she had not been. And she sat up in bed and twisted her hair for herself. And she asked for tea to drink. And when Wang Lung came, she said, "Now the new year is coming, and there are no cakes and no meats ready. And I have thought of a thing. I will not have that slave in my kitchen. But I would have you send for my daughter-in-law, who is betrothed to our eldest son. I have not seen her yet, but when she comes, I will tell her what to do." Wang Lung was pleased at her strength, although he cared nothing for festivities on this year, and he sent Cuckoo in to beseech Yu, the grain merchant, seeing how sad the case was. And after a while, Yu was willing, when he heard that Olan would not live the winter out, perhaps. And after all, the girl was 16, and older than some who go to their husbands' houses. But because of Olan, there was no feasting. The maiden came quietly in a sedan chair, except that her mother and an old servant came with her, and her mother went back when she had delivered the maiden to Olan, but the servant remained for the maiden's use. Now the children were moved from the room where they had slept, and the room was given to the new daughter-in-law, and all was arranged as it should be. Wang Lung did not speak with the maiden, since it was not fitting, but he inclined his head gravely when she bowed, and he was pleased with her. For she knew her duty, and she moved about the house quietly with her eyes downcast. Moreover, she was a goodly maid, fair enough, but not too fair, so as to be vain over it. She was careful and correct in all her behavior, and she went into Olan's room and tended her, and this eased Wang Lung of his pain for his wife, because now there was a woman about her bed, and Olan was very content. Olan was content for 3 days and more. And then she thought of another thing, and she said to Wang Lung, when he came in the morning to see how she did through the night,
"There is another thing before I can die."
To this he replied angrily, "You cannot speak of dying and please me." She smiled slowly then, the same slow smile that ended before it reached her eyes, and she answered, "Die I must, for I feel it in my vitals waiting. But I will not die before my eldest son comes home, and before he weds this good maid who is my daughter-in-law. And well she serves me, holding the hot water basin steadily, and knowing when to bathe my face when I sweat in pain. Now I want my son to come home, because I must die. And I want him to wed this maid first, so that I may die easily, knowing your grandson is stirred into life, and a great-grandson for the old one." Now, these were many words for her at any time, even in health, and she said them more sturdily than she had said anything for many moons. And Wang Lung was cheered at the strength in her voice, and with what vigor she desired this, and he would not cross her, although he would have liked more time for a great wedding for his eldest son. He only said heartily to her, therefore, "Well, and we will do this thing, and today I will send a man south, and he shall search for my son, and bring him home to be wed. And then you must promise me that you will gather your strength again, and give over dying, and grow well, for the house is like a cave for beasts without you." This he said to please her, and it pleased her, although she did not speak again, but lay back and closed her eyes, smiling a little. Wang Lung dispatched the man, therefore, and told him, "Tell your young lord that his mother is dying, and her spirit cannot rest in ease until she sees him and sees him wed. And if he values me and his mother and his home, he must come back before he draws another breath. For on the 3rd day from now I will have feasts prepared and guests invited, and he will be wed." And as Wang Lung said, so he did. He bade Cuckoo provide a feast as best she could, and she was to call in cooks from the shop in town to help her. And he poured silver into her hands, and he said, "Do as it would have been done in the great house at such an hour, and there is more silver than this." Then he went into the village and invited guests, men and women, everyone whom he knew. And he went into the town and invited whom he knew at the tea shops and at the grain markets, and everyone whom he knew. And he said to his uncle, "Ask whom you will for my son's marriage, any of your friends or any of your son's friends." This he said because he remembered always who his uncle was. And Wang Lung was courteous to his uncle and treated him as an honored guest. And so he had done from the hour when he knew who his uncle was. On the night of the day before his marriage, Wang Lung's eldest son came home. and he came striding into the room, and Wang Lung forgot all that the young man had troubled him when he was at home, for 2 years and more had passed since he saw this son of his. And here he was, and no longer a lad, but a tall man and a goodly one, with a great square body and high ruddy cheeks and short black hair, shining and oiled. And he wore a long dark red gown of satin, such as one finds in the shops of the South, and a short black velvet jacket without sleeves. And Wang Wang's heart burst with pride to see his son, and he forgot everything except this, his goodly son, and he led him to his mother. Then the young man sat beside his mother's bed, and the tears stood in his eyes to see her thus, but he would not say anything except cheerful things, such as these. "You look twice as well as they said, and years away from death." But Olan said simply, "I will see you wed, and then I must die." Now the maid who was to be wed must not, of course, be seen by the young man, and Lotus took her into the inner court to prepare her for marriage, and none could do this better than Lotus and Cuckoo and the wife of Wang Long's uncle. These three took the maid, and on the morning of her wedding day they washed her clean from head to foot, and bound her feet freshly with new white cloths under her new stockings, and Lotus rubbed into her flesh some fragrant almond oil of her own. Then they dressed her in garments she had brought from her home, white flowered silk next to her sweet virgin flesh, and then a light coat of sheep's wool of the finest and most curling kind, and then the red satin garments of marriage. And they rubbed lime upon her forehead, and with a string tied skillfully they pulled out the hairs of her virginity, the fringe over her brow, and they made her forehead high and smooth and square for her new estate. Then they painted her with powder and with red paint, and with a brush they drew out in two long slender lines her eyebrows, and they set upon her head the bride's crown and the beaded veil, and upon her small feet they put shoes embroidered, and they painted her fingertips and scented the palms of her hands, and thus they prepared her for marriage. To everything the maid was acquiescent, but reluctant and shy, as was proper and correct for her. Then Wang Lung and his uncle and his father and the guests waited in the middle room, and the maid came in supported by her own slave and by the wife of Wang Lung's uncle, and she came in modestly and correctly with her head bowed, and she walked as though she were unwilling to wed a man and must be supported to it. This showed her great modesty, and Wang Lung was pleased and said to himself that she was a proper maid. After this, Wang Lung's eldest son came in, dressed as he had been, in his red robe and his black jacket, and his hair was smooth and his fresh face shaven. Behind him came his two brothers, and Wang Lung, seeing them, was fit to burst with pride at this procession of his goodly sons, who were to continue after him the life of his body. Now the old man, who had not understood what was happening at all and could hear only the fragments of what was shouted to him, now suddenly he understood, and he cackled out with cracked laughter, and he said over and over in his piping old voice, "There is a marriage, and a marriage is children again, and grandchildren." And he laughed so heartily that the guests all laughed to see his mirth, and Wang Lung thought to himself that if only Olan had been up from her bed it would have been a merry day. All this time Wang Lung looked secretly and sharply at his son to see if he glanced at the maid, and the young man did glance secretly and from the corner of his eyes. But it was enough, for he grew pleased and merry in his ways, and Wang said proudly to himself, "Well, and I have chosen one he likes for him." Then the young man and the maid together bowed to the old man and to Wang Lung, and then they went into the room where Olan lay, and she had caused herself to be dressed in her good black coat, and she sat up when they came in, and on her face there burned two fiery spots of red, which Wang Lung mistook for health, so that he said loudly, "Now she will be well yet." And the two young persons went up and bowed to her, and she patted the bed and said, "Sit here and drink the wine and eat the rice of your marriage, for I will see it all, and this will be your bed of marriage, since I am soon to be finished with it and carried away." Now none would answer her when she spoke thus, But the two sat down side by side, shy and in silence of each other, and the wife of Wang Lung's uncle came in, fat and important with the occasion, bearing two bowls of hot wine, and the two drank separately, and then mingled the wine of the two bowls, and drank again, thus signifying that the two were now one. And they ate rice, and mingled the rice, and this signified that their life was now one, and thus they were wed. Then they bowed again to Olan and to Wang Lung, and then they went out, and together they bowed to the assembled guests. Then the feasting began, and the rooms and the courts were filled with tables, and with the smell of cooking, and with the sound of laughter, for the guests came from far and wide, those whom Wang Lung had invited, and with them many whom Wang Lung had never seen, since it was known he was a rich man, and food would never be missed or counted in his house at such a time. And Cuckoo had brought cooks from the town to prepare the feast, for there were to be many delicacies such as cannot be prepared in a farmer's kitchen. And the town cooks came bearing great baskets of food ready cooked, and only to be heated, and they made much of themselves, and flourished their grimy aprons, and bustled here and there in their zeal. And everyone ate more and yet more, and drank all they were able to hold, and they were all very merry. Olan would have all the doors open and the curtains drawn, so that she could hear the noise and the laughter, and could smell the food. And she said again and again to Wang Lung, who came often to see how she did, "And has everyone wine? And is the sweet rice dish in the middle of the feast very hot? And have they put full measure of lard and sugar into it, and the 8 fruits?" When he assured her that everything was as she wished it, she was content, and lay listening. Then it was over, and the guests were gone, and night came. And with the silence over the house, and with the ebbing of merriment, strength passed from Olan, and she grew weary and faint. And she called to her the two who had been wed that day, and she said,
"Now I am content, and this thing in me may do as it will. My son, look to your father and your grandfather, and my daughter, look to your husband and your husband's father and his grandfather, and the poor fool in the court, there is she, and you have no duty to any other."
This last she said, meaning Lotus, to whom she had never spoken. Then she seemed to fall into a fitful sleep, although they waited for her to speak further, and once more she roused herself to speak. Yet when she spoke, it was as though she did not know they were there, or indeed where she was, for she said, muttering and turning her head this way and that, and her eyes closed,
"Well, and if I am ugly, still I have borne a son. Although I am but a slave, there is a son in my house."
And again she said suddenly,
"How can that one feed him and care for him as I do? Beauty will not bear a man's sons."
And she forgot them all and lay muttering. Then Wang Lung motioned them to go away, and he sat beside her while she slept and woke, and he looked at her. And he hated himself because even as she lay dying, he saw how wide and ghastly her purpled lips drew back from her teeth. Then, as he looked, she opened her eyes wide, and it seemed there was some strange mist over them, for she stared at him full, and stared again, wondering and fixing her eyes on him, as though she wondered who he was. Suddenly her head dropped off the round pillow where it lay, and she shuddered and was dead. Once she lay dead, it seemed to Wang Lung that he could not bear to be near Olan, and he called his uncle's wife to wash the body for burial, and when it was finished he would not go in again, but he allowed his uncle's wife and his eldest son and his daughter-in-law to lift the body from the bed and set it into the great coffin he had bought. But to comfort himself, he busied himself in going to the town and calling men to seal the coffin according to custom. And he went and found a geomancer, and asked him for a lucky day for burials. He found a good day 3 months hence, and it was the first good day the geomancer could find. So Wang Lung paid the man, and went to the temple in the town, and he bargained with the abbot there, and rented a space for a coffin for 3 months. And there was Olan's coffin brought, to rest until the day of burial, for it seemed to Wang Lung he could not bear to have it under his eyes in the house. Then Wang Lung was scrupulous to do all that should be done for the one dead, so he caused mourning to be made for himself and for his children, and their shoes were made of coarse white cloth, which is the color of mourning, and about their ankles they bound bands of white cloth, and the women in the house bound their hair with white cord. After this, Wang Lung could not bear to sleep in the room where O Lan had died, and he took his possessions and moved altogether into the inner court where Lotus lived. And he said to his eldest son, "Go with your wife into that room where your mother lived and died, who conceived and bore you, and beget there your own sons." So the two moved into it, and were content. Then, as though death could not easily leave the house where it had come once, the old man, Wang Lung's father, who had been distraught ever since he saw them putting the stiff dead body of O Lan into the coffin, lay down on his bed one night for sleeping, and when the second daughter came in to him in the morning to bring him his tea, there he lay on his bed, his scattered old beard thrust up into the air, and his head thrown back in death. She cried out at the sight and ran crying to her father, and Wang Lung came in and found the old man so. His light, stiff old body was dry and cold and thin as a gnarled pine tree, and he had died hours before, perhaps as soon as he had laid himself upon the bed. Then Wang Lung washed the old man himself, and he laid him gently in the coffin he had bought for him, and he had it sealed, and he said, "On the same day we will bury these two dead from our house, and I will take a good piece of my hill land, and we will bury them there together, and when I die I will be laid there also." So he did what he said he would do. When he had sealed the old man's coffin, he set it upon two benches in the middle room, and there it stood until the appointed day came. And it seemed to Wang Lung that it was a comfort to the old man to be there, even dead, and he felt near to his father in the coffin. For Wang Lung grieved for his father, but not unto death, because his father was very old and full of years, and for many years had been but half alive. Then on the day appointed by the geomancer in the full of the spring of the year, Wang Lung called priests from the Taoist temple, and they came dressed in their yellow robes and their long hair knotted on their crowns. And he called priests from the Buddhist temples, and they came in their long gray robes, their heads shaven and set with the nine sacred scars. And these priests beat drums and chanted the whole night through for the two who were dead. And whenever they stopped their chanting, Wang Lung poured silver into their hands, and they took breath again and chanted, and did not cease until dawn rose. Now Wang Lung had chosen a good place in his fields, under a date tree upon a hill, to set the graves. And Qing had the graves dug and ready, and a wall of earth made about the graves. And there was space within the walls for the body of Wang Lung, and for each of his sons and their wives, and there was space for sons' sons also. This land Wang Lung did not begrudge, even though it was high land and good for wheat, because it was a sign of the establishment of his family upon their own land. Dead and alive, they would rest upon their own land. Then on the appointed day after the priests had finished the night of chanting, Wang Lung dressed himself in a robe of white sackcloth, and he gave a robe like it to his uncle and his uncle's son, and to his own sons each a robe, and to his son's wife, and to his own two daughters. He called chairs from the town to carry them, for it was not meet that they walked to the place of burial as though he were a poor man and a common fellow. So for the first time he rode on men's shoulders, and behind the coffin where O Lan was. But behind his father's coffin his uncle rode first. Even Lotus, who in Olan's lifetime could not appear before her, now that Olan was dead, she came riding in a chair, in order that before others she might appear dutiful to the first wife of her husband. So for his uncle's wife and for his uncle's son, Wang Lung hired chairs also, and for all of them he had robes of sackcloth, and even for the poor fool he made a robe, and hired a chair, and put her in it, although she was sorely bewildered and laughed shrilly when there should have been only weeping. Then, mourning and weeping loudly, they went to the graves, the laborers and Qing following and walking and wearing white shoes. And Wang Lung stood beside the two graves. He had caused the coffin of O Lan to be brought from the temple, and it was put on the ground to await the old man's burial first. And Wang Lung stood and watched, and his grief was hard and dry. And he would not cry out loud as others did, for there were no tears in his eyes, because it seemed to him that what had come about was come about, and there was nothing to be done more than he had done. But when the earth was covered over and the graves smoothed, he turned away, silent.